The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We have word that the Supreme Court has issued a ruling on the extent of presidential immunity from criminal prosecution for conduct alleged to involve official acts during the tenure of President Trump. This is the big one we've been waiting for. It's consequential. It's really interesting that the Supreme Court in 248 years of our history has never actually ruled on this. So it is big and sweeping. And I have our political panel looking over this right now. Andy McCarthy, Chief Justice John Roberts has the writing on this. He's got the pen. Is that significant?
It's very significant. It's the most important case of the term in terms of the long-term interests of the executive branch, in terms of the short-term interests of Donald Trump. And it looks like, at least within the bounds of clear executive authority, what Chief Justice Roberts is saying is that the president clearly has immunity from prosecution.
The victories just keep on coming for President Donald Trump. It's been a whirlwind these past few days with all of these decisions coming out of the Supreme Court. And of course, the debate from last Thursday, that's still fresh on everyone's minds. But he used to say when campaigning back in 2016 that we're going to have so many victories, you're going to get tired of winning. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We're broadcasting to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. A little bit of an early start for us. 9 a.m. here is the live broadcast time out west. So we're happy that you're joining us on today's show. Of course, you can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com and also at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. We're out here because of the personal appearance campaign that happened yesterday afternoon in this very hotel. I didn't get an exact count on how many came, but it was a relatively small ballroom. So we were tightly packed inside of that. And I gave a message that went on for about an hour and 15 minutes. We had some nice fun and fellowship after that. And of course, after that, we were able to view the Celtic Throne performance here in Phoenix, Arizona. That brought in, I think, 625 people. We've got a second show this evening. As of yesterday, I think that was at about 400 people. So hopefully with more promotion yesterday and even at last night's show, we'll have another show inside of a very intimate theater in downtown Phoenix where it felt like you were right on top of the stage. So it was exciting to see. The crowd was really into it. And all of them stood up, by the way, at My Country, Tis of Thee. So an exciting show here in Phoenix. Lots and lots going on with God's work. In fact, speaking of the pack, we have a 15-minute segment that we'll be playing at the end of this show to serve as our Bible study for today. So if you didn't make it to the pack in Phoenix yesterday, you'll get a 15-minute preview of what I talked about here in Phoenix. So lots of news going on, as I say. Richard Palmer in his trumpet brief this morning talked about this historic vote yesterday in France. France swinging to the right, another populist uprising, I guess you could say. Now, Richard gets into some of the details and talks about how that this might not change a lot politically. But still, it is being seen around the world as another rejection of the status quo of the ruling class. Steve Bannon, I think, said this morning that he likened it to the 2016 Brexit vote that was sort of a prelude to Donald Trump coming in later that year. So we'll see how that this plays out. I know it's only the first round. I think the second round of the vote is this next weekend. Speaking of Steve Bannon, by the way, he's off to prison, I think, in Connecticut somewhere. So he's there. He's just down the road. I think he's already made it to the prison as of this time. But earlier today, he's just down the road. He's broadcasting He's giving another show, another war room presentation before he goes off to prison. He's sounding the alarm. There was a report over the weekend, I think it was MSNBC, that basically said he's like the successor to Rush Limbaugh. Think of it, the Joe Obama people putting in jail the political opposition. That's clear. He's basically been charged for a misdemeanor, and they're sending him off to prison for 4 months. These are the same people that want to empty the prisons, basically. These are the same people that are inviting criminals into the country. They want to let all the criminals out of jail, if possible, except for the MAGA people. Well, it looks like the kingdom's court, to paraphrase what's said there in Amos 7 and verse 13, is rising in defense of Donald Trump, of the Jeroboam, the end time Jeroboam. It's pretty amazing to watch as you read through. I refer to America Under Attack all the time on this show. But as you read through chapter 10 in particular, I drew attention to that yesterday at the PAC. Just note the detail that God has given to his church, to his family. Tomorrow's news today. I mean, he really has given us insights into so many details, and we don't get everything spot on, but the framework is there. You put America Under Attack together with the United States and Britain in prophecy, you will be informed. You will know what's coming next. Just coming back to this Supreme Court ruling, this was the summary. Basically, it declared that the president is immune regarding all official acts as president. And if it's an unofficial act, well, he can still be held to account. So basically, it kicks it back to the appellate level. And at the very least, it stretches this out beyond the presidential election of November, which means that once Trump gets in, if that's the time that God wants for him to return, that his DOJ will just dismiss this case out of hand. So ridiculous. But here at least, the Supreme Court, 6-3, ruling in favor of Donald Trump. This is also from the morning brief. We didn't really have time to get into some of those rulings that the Supreme Court kicked out on Friday, but you had the Fisher case, which basically undercut something like 300 cases against January 6 protesters. And then the other one was the Chevron case, which also began to dismantle the administrative state. And you see all these articles over the weekend, the New York Times and elsewhere, where they're panicking over what happened at the debate. They're also panicking at the fact that the federal bureaucracy is losing power. That's the significance of this Chevron case. It's not gone by that name, but it involved Chevron many, many, many years ago. But Richard said in his morning brief, Friday saw some dramatic rulings from the Supreme Court. In its decision in Fisher versus the United States could overturn hundreds of convictions for January 6 protesters. Hundreds of convictions. Here again, these are the same people that want to release hardened criminals out into the streets of America. But if you went into the Capitol on that day, January 6, 2021, they want you to rot in jail. They want Steve Bannon to rot in jail. They want to remove him from the airwaves. These people that are censoring the voices. And the thing of it is, every time they do it, they think that MAGA will just go away quietly. And all that it does is it gives them more momentum. It helps President Trump rise in the opinion polls. We'll look at the other side of that in a second, or if we have time later. I can see the clock's moving quickly already. So we've got a lot we want to try to squeeze in. But further on, Richard Palmer says here, this could eliminate two of special counsel Jack Smith's four charges against Donald Trump. So it also helps Donald Trump. In addition to those 300 protesters, it helps Donald Trump. Same with the ruling today on immunity. This is from Fox News, Friday, clip number 7.
Then do any of the rioters who are in jail today get released because of this?
They very well could be. There's two aspects to this. Some of them were convicted of what is now established to be improper charges. I mean, that hundreds of people were the subject of improper charges by the Justice Department. That includes President Trump, who has not been tried yet. They were also sentenced based on this conviction, as well as a mix of other things. So those sentencing decisions now have to be reevaluated. I've said all along that I was surprised by how heavy the Department of Justice went on obstruction. I analogized it to someone going to Vegas and playing roulette, but only betting red. Well, basically, the court just said red's not a bet. So we've got to go back and look at all of these cases, not just for those who now have these convictions knocked out, but how they impact sentencing. For President Trump, this is a big day. I mean, I've said all along that Fisher needs to be treated as important as the immunity decision potentially for Trump. It basically rips the wings off the plane that Jack Smith is trying to get off the ground in D.C. Now, can he push that plane forward on the running way? I don't know. Because if you take this claim out, it's really integral to his entire complaint. I mean, it's hard to see how the complaint holds together if he was excessive and wrong in bringing these charges.
It just guts the entire case. It's like I say, it's pretty stunning to see these developments. They thought, how many times have we heard over the years that Donald Trump is finished? This case regarding Chevron, Richard subheads it with the end to rule by experts. Or is this an end to rule by the experts, the bureaucrats, the administrative state, all of these unelected government officials? He says here, the Supreme Court's 6-3 ruling in Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo has even more long-term implications. It overturned the 1984 Chevron doctrine, allowing government agencies, listen to this, to interpret the laws they regulate. In other words, the government agencies, the experts, the Faucis of the world, they have final say, even more so than the courts. And the Supreme Court said Friday, no, some bureaucrat in some agency somewhere, he's not going to have final say. Who's to say he's an expert? It makes you think of what Paul said in 1 Timothy 6. Science falsely so-called. That's what Fauci is, essentially, a fake scientist. So they're panicking. They're panicking because they're losing their grip on power. They want to rule. I went through some of that with you on Friday, but this is from the New York Times, also from Friday. It says a foundational 1984 decision had required courts to defer to agencies' reasonable interpretations of ambiguous statutes underpinning regulations on healthcare, safety, and environment. The Supreme Court on Friday reduced the power of executive agencies by sweeping aside a long-standing legal precedent, endangering countless regulations and transferring power from the executive branch to Congress and the courts. And the deep state, of course, hates this. The translation for what I just gave to you there from the New York Times is that the administrative state finally is beginning to be dismantled. And this is even before Jeroboam returns. Listen to this again is from Fox News the other day, clip 6.
But for Trump, what a day. I mean, his nominees put the court over the top in delivering the coup de grace on Chevron. And then they just knocked out hundreds of these convictions for January 6th. These citizens should not have been charged with this crime.
Just to be clear, Joseph Fisher is one of about 330 people charged with this obstruction of official proceeding in connection with January 6th. And, you know, that's a fraction of the 1,350 or so January 6th defendants, but it's a big, big deal.
As I say, that all of that's from Friday. We didn't have time to cover it on the show because we were talking so much about the debate So, as I say, it's been a whirlwind 3 days or so. But what a big day that was for Donald Trump in more ways than one. And then you come to today, and this was the really big ruling, the immunity ruling. This was the last one. The Supremes waited for the last day to submit this ruling. And here again, it comes out in Donald Trump's favor. As I say, it makes you think about Amos 7 and verse 13, and you can read more about that in chapter 10 of America Under Attack. Well, really throughout America Under Attack. But go back and just look at chapter 10 of that book, and you can learn more about the favor. I mean, we do know about 2 Kings 14. I went through that yesterday in the pack. And he is, you know, alone in so many ways. He has no helper, as it says over there. But Amos 7 does mention that, you know, he's got the support of the evangelical movement, and he does have the support of the kingdom's court, to just use the Old Testament language there. But listen to this. We've had this on the docket for the last several shows. I think it's from 5 or 6 days ago. Steve Bannon, before they carted him off to prison, he's on with Mike Davis, who was reporting at the Supreme Court about some of these decisions that were coming down. This goes back to last Tuesday or Wednesday, I believe, clip 8.
I would say this, that elections have consequences. And if President Trump did not appoint Justices Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett and help transform the 5-4 left of center Supreme Court to the 5-4 Clarence Thomas Supreme Court, we would have much different results today. Everything is on the line on November 5th, 2024. Our God-given rights to speak, to worship, to associate, and to protect ourselves.
Elections have consequences, he says. And again, Donald Trump appointed 3 of these justices. And this, of course, is what makes the radical Democrats declare the Supreme Court as illegitimate. They love radical courts, for sure. But they hate the Supreme Court. And all of this aligns with what God has revealed in the book of Amos, chapter 7 in particular. Lots more to get to on today's show. We'll follow up on the debate from last Thursday and the back and forth. First, Biden's out. Now he's in. He's digging in his heels. You've got Obama and others in the background saying that you need to step aside. We'll update you on the very latest when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
On Thursday, we watched a disastrous debate that has the nation fearing like never before another Trump presidency. And not going to lie, Biden's performance in Atlanta was as horrific as it was sad. And now Democrats are in full panic mode with calls for the president to bow out of the race for someone younger. But Donald Trump's performance was as horrifying as it was terrifying. He put on a campaign rally filled with his usual avalanche of lies, projection, and veiled threats. Then on Friday, the Supreme Court, the one with the 6-3 conservative supermajority, thanks to Trump's one-term presidency, handed down decisions that were further exhibits of why elections matter. It threw out a 40-year-old ruling that gave federal agencies the power to use their expertise to determine policy when the law is ambiguous. The panic unleashed by Biden's performance is understandable. But as Vice President Harris said in an interview, President Biden should be judged on his masterful performance over the last 3.5 years, not 90 disastrous minutes. Also, and most importantly, if Republicans are standing lockstep with a 78-year-old disgraced, twice impeached, 4 times indicted on 88 counts and convicted on 34 felonies former president, who's been found liable for fraud and sexual assault and is awaiting trial for trying to overturn the 2020 election and for refusing to return classified documents, then Democrats damn well should be standing lockstep with their ethical and morally decent 81-year-old president who has a raft of bipartisan accomplishments many said he could never achieve and is presiding over the strongest economy in the world.
In his first rally following the debate, we saw a completely different, totally different Joe Biden from the one we saw on the debate stage the night before. Look, one speech at one rally is not going to change the dynamics of the race. It's not going to erase the debate performance from anyone's memory from the night before. And it's not going to make those questions about Biden stepping aside go away. But that one speech and the power of that speech, especially the end, does give you a window into his thinking. He's a competitive guy.
But I think people ought to just chill out. This is something that denotes what can happen anytime a sitting president takes it upon himself to debate. And so for him to go into preparation, and what I've been calling this a classic example of preparation overload, I just think that there should have been much less preparation for this debate and much more activism in his job.
You know, Congressman, I actually agree with you. You can see the president trying to remember the dollars and the figures and the everything. And there were moments when just the President Biden from the heart, as one person called him, Irish Biden, would come out and say, more of that, please.
My people are very much Biden, Kamala Harris, and this is an opportunity for Joe Biden to go out there and show he has the stamina and the rest. And by the way, while the press, and for some reason they don't, there are healthcare professionals who think that Trump has dementia, that his connection, his thoughts do not go together. Not only that he just lies, he doesn't even know the truth. So if we're just talking about mental acuity, let's be fair about it. So in any case, it was a bad night. Let's not sugarcoat that. It was a bad night. It was a great presidency.
I think Pelosi had a senior moment there right at the end of that clip. She is saying now, if you can believe it, that it's Donald Trump. This is the big takeaway, hot new take for Monday morning. Donald Trump has dementia. I tweeted on Friday. This was after that rally that Joe Biden, the fake president, had in North Carolina. So it was the day after the disastrous debate, and he did show more energy. He was shouting a bit more. The crowd seemed a little bit more enthusiastic, and I sent out a clip of it, and I said, Biden's not going away yet. Will be absolutely hilarious if on Monday the regime media switches back to Biden is better than ever. I mean, you can't make this up. On Friday's show, is practically the entire show, we went through just how stunning it was to see the regime media. The second the debate ended, they all threw Biden under the bus. He's finished. He's senile. He's got dementia. We've got to get someone else in. Now, there's still some. The Democrat Party is divided. There still are some that are calling for that. And if you believe some of the reporting that's coming out, even leaving aside what Barack Obama tweeted on a Friday afternoon, behind closed doors, they're saying, Joe, you've got to move on. And then, you know, there's the other reports where the Biden family got together yesterday and Jill and Hunter said, no, stay in, stay in. And evidently Jill's shielding Joe from anyone that would dare suggest that he step aside. So who knows how that this will play out, but there's just 8 weeks to the convention. And if he survives the next 8 weeks, that's it. I mean, he's the nominee. And it's looking like, as I suggested on Friday, more and more like it's a trap. We lost one of our lights. Hopefully it's not too dark in the frame. In any event, they are between a rock and a hard place. They're in a difficult position, the Democrats, for sure. This is following the point that I made on Friday, how that, you know, if these people were really serious about their country, if they were really serious about helping the United States of America, if they were really concerned about what it means to have a president in power or a president that's going to be running the country for the next 7 months, they would say, hey, it's not about the election. Forget about the election. What about the fact that he's leading the world's lone superpower? But they don't care about that, really. And as I said on last week's program, I mean, this shows you just how easy it is for these people to spew propaganda and to tell you lies. This article over the weekend from the Wall Street Journal, the world saw Biden deteriorating. Democrats ignored the warnings. But it's worse than that. The whole world sees this. World leaders see this. And it's not that Democrats are ignoring it. They're covering it up. They're actively working to cover up the truth. And then, I mean, he's not going to go away quietly. So then Monday morning rolls around and there you hear Nancy Pelosi saying that, you know, he's doing a great job. Clyburn saying he overprepared for the debate. Okay, he overprepared. This is from that Wall Street Journal piece. It says, European officials had already been expressing worries in private about Biden's focus and stamina before Thursday's debate, with some senior diplomats saying they had tracked a noticeable deterioration in the president's faculties in meetings since last summer. I mean, this has been going on for a year. World leaders see it. It's so obvious. You see it. Because you see it on video. I mean, I was talking to someone yesterday at the PAC whose wife died recently and she was struggling with dementia in those final years. And he said, you know, on one hand, you can sympathize with those who maybe are in denial because they're right up close to it and they don't see it except in incremental stages. Whereas if someone's coming in, you know, after 3-4 months, they see it and it's shocking. Well, the thing of it is, you can go back to last summer, let's say, and get video. This is someone who's videotaped more than probably anybody in the world, except maybe Donald Trump. You can track you can compare 2024 to 2020 to 2016. There's no excuse for the regime media to lie about this, to cover this up. Except that they thought they had it in the bag. They thought Trump was finished. They thought the puppet would work for another round, or at least that the puppet would get us through the 2024 election, and then Kamala takes over and everything's A-OK. Well, now their plans have been disrupted. The journal quotes this European official saying, the reading in Europe is that this has been an unmitigated disaster. That's from one official. I think the assistant director to some institute in European affairs. I mean, it's devastating. It's devastating. And here again, it's not even about age. Although I do think it's interesting that when you send out the people to defend an aging Joe Biden, it's Pelosi. I think she's 83 or 84. Clyburn, same thing. That they are struggling to come up with some kind of believable defense. And then, as you see, they're flip-flopping back and forth. Well, Axios, I won't go through all of it. Axios has a piece, Behind the Curtain, Biden's Salvation Plan. I mean, it's amazing how they just turn on a dime. I was watching Thursday night and I thought, finally, they're all admitting that he does have dementia. He's the president of the United States, illegitimate at that, but still he's occupying the Oval Office. And they finally all admit on Thursday night that he has dementia and that he can't run for re-election. He can't be tried, according to the HER report, because he's got dementia. He's an elderly old man with a bad memory. So, I mean, he would win sympathy from the jury. So he can't be tried in court. He can't run for re-election, but evidently he can run the United States of America for the next 7 months. Well, as you know, he's not running the nation. Barack Obama is. The dear leader is. But just to reinforce this point about the regime media backtracking on Morning Meltdown, Joe didn't even show up today. Mika said he's on some kind of a bland vacation. You have to wonder what's going on in the hearts of these individuals who are so corrupt and so dishonest. Joe doesn't show up, and so here's Mika this morning on Morning Meltdown to do the backtracking, clip 5.
On Friday's show, I should clarify, Joe said it may be time for Biden to consider stepping aside. He also said we should wait a few days to see how he responds. We're shoulder to shoulder on that. I do agree. Joe Biden has work to do. He has to do better. His team has to do a lot better. I'm just not ready, though, to count Joe Biden out. Not even close. The choice is one terribly bad night versus a decade of destruction to our core beliefs, our democratic values, and yes, our Constitution.
They counted him out on Thursday night, and here she is on Monday morning saying, we're not ready to count him out, not even close. This is from the New York Post, Miranda Devine. Jill Biden's, she's talking about how that the Bidens have come together and they're protecting Joe. They want him to stay in it. I think there was a headline at Breitbart saying that Hunter maybe has been the most vocal in that his father should stay the course. Wouldn't that be an amazing turn of events? If it's Hunter Biden that basically keeps Joe Biden in there and snuffs out Barack Obama, essentially. I mean, Barack Obama's the puppet master, but he can't, I mean, last time I checked anyway, he can't go into the Oval Office and forcibly move Joe Biden. If Joe Biden says, I'm staying, and he just, as I say, he just gets to the convention, that's it, lights out. It's Joe Biden against Donald Trump. And when you look at all of the polls, maybe I can just skip ahead to some of the polling numbers. This is from CNN. These are numbers following the debate, clip number 3.
Look at this. Voters who say that Biden has the mental health to be president. It was just 35% pre-debate. Look where it's dropped to now post-debate, 27%. How about that he should be running for president? It was 37% pre-debate. It's now 28%. I have never seen numbers this bad for an incumbent president during my lifetime. I mean, that mental health to be president, just 27%. You might say, okay, you know, that's low, but a lot of people thought Biden was too old back in 2020. These numbers look nothing like this back in 2020. These numbers were bad already. And the truth is, Allison, they have gotten just considerably worse, even in just a few days after that first presidential debate.
So much worse than even 2020. So much worse than last Thursday, even. Listen to Nancy Pelosi as she tries to dismiss this latest poll. 72%. This is clip 4.
What is your reaction to that poll? 72% of voters say they don't think that the president is fit mentally or cognitively to be president.
Well, what do they think about the other guy? Do they think that he has the integrity to be president after that performance? Let us not make a judgment about a presidency on one debate.
These people are delusional. What do you think about the poll? 72% say he's not mentally fit. Well, what do they think about the other guy? I mean, that is Trump derangement syndrome on steroids. What you heard right there from Nancy Pelosi. 72%. And then you look at the polls favoring Donald Trump. As far as she's concerned, I guess, those don't count. Well, as I said, Barack Obama, he comes out with a tweet that says Friday afternoon. He was quiet after the debate ended Thursday. He was quiet Friday morning. Then he finally comes out and says, look, everybody has a bad debate. Come on now. We know what this election comes down to. Joe Biden, even though he has dementia, he didn't say that. But even though there's that, he tells the truth and Donald Trump doesn't. So the choice is clear. Tucker Carlson tweeted out either today or yesterday that was a disingenuous, according to his sources, that was disingenuous of Obama to say that, because behind the scenes, he's been hard at work to pressure Joe Biden into stepping down or at least not running for re-election. I want to save time. We've got the 15-minute segment at the end, but this feedback from Irvine, California, it's been on the docket for quite a few days as well. This goes back to last week. Hopefully we'll have some feedback from the shows here in Phoenix in the days ahead, but we'll cut ahead to the feedback from the Irvine performance of Celtic Throne just a week or so ago, clip 10.
We loved it, and I brought my daughters, and they're former Irish dancers, but they also do ballet and all their types of dance. They're very impressed with it. Yeah. They love the modern, but also the traditional Irish dance in it.
Amazing. Every bit as good as river dance and things, so I'm so excited I can take it with me.
Awesome. I love how they can, the tap dancers can click their heels when they're up in the air like that. I mean, their feet move so fast. It's great. Yeah, and the singing is beautiful too. And the kids are gorgeous.
Everybody seemed really, really happy. All the little kids were just smiling and dancing their hearts out.
Well, I was just telling her that I was really noticing the joy in the performers, and I was getting to know her a little bit, and she was saying that they have grown up together, known each other like all their lives, have been apart. Some of them have gone live in the same town, gone to the same colleges, this and that. And I said, it's really apparent on the stage that there is like friendship and love and all of this. And I was saying, it's actually making me emotional watching it, because it's such a real expression of these relationships. And right, I keep leaning over to my friend and being like, I'm on the verge of tears right now, and I don't know what's going on. So it's just like, yeah, it's beautiful. And I said, I see shows all the time. I've seen any show that you can name, I've seen. And I said, I don't usually call people at intermission and tell them they need to see it. And I just called my brother and said, you need to come see this. So
the level of coordination and synchronicity was incredibly impressive.
Beautiful. The dancing, the choreography, the costumes, every scene. My mom and I were just melting in our seats. It's my birthday, so this is one of the most celebrated birthdays ever. I'm so glad we came tonight.
It was wonderful. Yeah, I would highly recommend people come and see it.
Throughout the whole show, I felt like I didn't blink, because that's how fast the feet were moving. So it was really like, wow, like no comment. Like that's all I got to say.
Phenomenal. I can't wait to go to Ireland next year. I mean, it just brought everything home. I was crying. It was phenomenal. It was really, really good.
Oh, it's so fantastic. I never thought it would be this great. It's really good, especially Stephen's son. He is so phenomenal. So good.
Breathtaking. I used to do all kinds of plays of the Messiah. I know the work that went into this. I know the background work. I know what stage plays are about. And the background workers, they have it the hardest. But this is awesome. And you guys got to carry this all the way. You got to go to other countries. This is too unique not to carry it. This got to be international. This got to be international. I brought my daughter. This is her birthday. This was her birthday celebration for this. This is just one of a kind. This is got to come back. but you gotta go overseas. This gotta be seen and heard from everyone.
We loved it. We thought it was one of the best things we've ever seen, ever. Better than Riverdance. Just fabulous.
There you go. Feedback from Irvine, California. If you'd like to attend the performance tonight in Phoenix, just go to CelticThrone.com. You can secure tickets at that website for Phoenix or for Amarillo on Wednesday. And then the final show of this tour, that's back in Edmond, Oklahoma on Sunday, July 7. I just saw a tweet, by the way, from Eric Holder in response to the immunity ruling today from the Supreme Court. Our democracy, he says, has been gravely wounded. The Trump immunity decision says a president can violate the criminal law if he acts within his broadly defined constitutional authority. Absurd, dangerous. There's no basis in the Constitution for this court-constructed monstrosity. You know, if Eric Holder thinks it's a monstrosity, that this is a pretty good ruling coming out from the Supremes. Another item that I saw just as it, we're going to go a minute or two over. Hopefully that's fine with the producers here. Trump and Joe Biden are now basically tied in New Jersey, Virginia, Minnesota, New Hampshire, Maine, and New Mexico. These are traditionally blue states. Nancy Pelosi says, well, forget about the 72% polling. I mean, what do they think about the other guy? Well, evidently, they think pretty highly of the other guy. With that, we will conclude today's program with a 15-minute segment from yesterday's personal appearance campaign right here in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. Take it away.
2 Kings 14 and verse 23 says, in the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, it says, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria and reigned 41 years, it says, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Eternal, and he departed not from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. So there's two Jeroboams, the first one, you know, following the days of Solomon, and then Jeroboam the two, and really both of them came in the same spirit. So this passage here, of course, is referring to Jeroboam the second. But Jeroboam the first, I mean, he set up this counterfeit religious system. He wanted people to stay away from Jerusalem and the throne of David. And so, but he wanted people to be religious. And so he created a religion, basically, and installed all these priests and so on. Verse 25, it says, and he restored, speaking of Jeroboam the second, he restored the coast of Israel from the entering of Hamath unto the sea of the plain, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he spoke by the hand of his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, which was of God Hefer, it says. So Jeroboam too really led Israel anciently to be as powerful, or at least almost as powerful as even in the days of Solomon, you know, the glory and the splendor of Solomon's kingdom, maybe not rising to that level of, you know, glory, but still, as far as power and strength, he led quite a resurgence. And yet, as this passage brings out, I mean, Israel at that time was still in a sinful state. It wasn't because of their righteousness or because of their repentance that God blessed them with this growing empire or kingdom. It wasn't because of that. It was because God did not want the name of Israel to be blotted out. And so he intervened. Verse 26, it says, for the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. And the Eternal said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam. God intervened, and he gave Israel one last opportunity to turn to him in repentance, even when they really didn't deserve it. They didn't deserve it. You see that same scenario in Amos 7, where God's about to intervene to punish Israel. And in two cases, the prophet says, no, but for this reason, you know, hold off. And God did twice. But then in, I think it's Amos 7 and verse 7, he says, all right, there's one final pass. And Amos, don't argue for them anymore. That's it. They've had their opportunity. My father wrote this in a Trumpet article. This was back in March of 2020. It says, because of the progress that Jeroboam is making, many people, he's talking about the modern day Jeroboam. And as I think you probably know, if you're a Trumpet reader, and we have Trumpet readers here, we believe that Donald Trump has come in the spirit of Jeroboam and that there has been a resurgence and will be another when God puts him back in office. But he says, because of the progress that he's making, many people believe that the danger is past and the nation is heading in a new direction. But sadly, this will not change the country's direction. The only thing that would do that is repentance before God. And that's not happening. Repentance before God. There's another article going way back to the Plain Truth that talked about Jeroboam II and how that when he came in and made all these reforms and expanded their territories and increased their power, that Israelites developed this false sense of security. They thought, okay, the kingdom is growing and expanding. There's a resurgence. And it's easy to think that way when things begin to go well or when things improve. It's easy to settle into a state of complacency. We've seen it happen not just with ancient Israel, but we've seen it happen over and over again. That 10th chapter in America Under Attack, I think it's titled Donald Trump Is Coming Back or Will Return, something along those lines. But in that 10th chapter, my father writes this. He says, right now there is a great focus on whether Donald Trump will return to office. Prophecy shows that he will. The bigger issue is what will happen after Trump regains power. It says in chapter 10 of America Under Attack, he will stop the blotting out of the name of Israel. But this nation is very far from God, and Jeroboam and everyone else need a powerful warning and a call to repentance. He'll stop the blotting out, but what about the rampant sin? What about the sickness? What about the transgression? That's something that, if you noticed, it wasn't really addressed at the debate the other night. 2 Timothy 3. And just going back over the transcript of the debate, we were skimming through some of it this morning. And, you know, you watch it in real time and because you look at the bigger picture and you think, you know, Trump is coming back and then you see the dementia setting in and you think, wow, this is momentous, whatever's happening here. But when you go back and look at the transcript, there was one commentator, by the way, that said, actually, if you look at the transcript, what Joe Biden had to say was very coherent and clear. Okay. If you say so. That does not come through in the transcript. But what does come through when you start reading about, you know, child care tax credits, what are we going to do to solve, you know, climate change? Are you against abortion medication? You look at some of the subjects and you're thinking, is this really, are these the hot button issues? And of course, it's always weighted more to the radical left wing issues. Something like, I think, 7 or 8 or 9 questions that were more for them, 3 or so for the Republicans, and then maybe 10 or 11 in the middle. But still, look at 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1. It says, this know also that in the last days, perilous times shall come. Perilous times are upon us. We're living in dangerous times. And you got to be careful not to get too caught up into one political side or the other, because danger is all around. My father's been emphasizing the importance of just taking on a warlike mentality, not in the physical sense, but spiritually speaking. I mean, Satan is our adversary. Satan's deceived the whole world. He goes about as a roaring lion. And so we've got to be on guard. We've got to be vigilant, the Bible says. We've got to draw near to God and resist the devil. or he'll devour us. Dangerous times. That's what Paul prophesied for the last days. Are we living in the last days? You don't hear too much about that from the churches of this world. There's lots of churches. There's lots of pro-Trump churches. But are we in the last days? Notice what Paul goes on and discusses. He says, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, and unholy." I mean, it goes on. We'll just break it off right there, though. Look at that right in the middle. Disobedient to parents. Disobedience to parents, it says. That's going to be very common for the last days. And you look at that sin and the many others around it, it's a sign that our society is disintegrating. There's just been a total breakdown of the family. And Herbert Armstrong talked a lot about that. As I said, we were just looking through some of the debate transcript. And I asked Sam, I said, just focus not so much on what either candidate said, but focus on the questions. One was about the $1 trillion deficit, the record debt. And I think it was Jake Tapper who asked, you know, should top earners and corporations pay even less in taxes when we've got to, you know, pay back these debts? I mean, the record debt, it is a real problem. But if you notice in all of these questions, you're basically addressing the effect. There's nothing in the debate, nothing in the questioning that has to do with root causes. Like, how can we go back and solve these runaway debts or whatever else the problem is? They asked President Trump, would you block abortion medications? Is that important to you? And then for his part, he had to kind of navigate around that subject carefully because, you know, you don't want to offend your base. A lot of his base is very much pro-life. Do you support any legal limits on how late a woman should be able to terminate a pregnancy? That's what we're discussing. Should she be able to terminate the pregnancy all the way? And, you know, President Trump made a big point about how the opposition, they want to have, you know, abortions all the way up to the end. In some cases, even right after. There's a fair bit on immigration, as you probably remember. What do you say to voters who believe that you violated that oath through your actions and inaction on January 6th and worry that you'll do it again? That was a pretty big section of the debate as well. Did you violate your oath of office with the so-called insurrection? Can you clarify exactly what it means about you feeling you have every right to go after your political opponents? Retribution. Can you tell us what you intend to do when you come back or if you come back? Former President Trump, you vowed to end your opponent's climate initiatives. Will you take any action as president to slow the climate crisis? What are you going to do about the climate? The climate crisis. Another one here says, for many families, the cost of childcare, that's the cost for putting your children in daycare, the cost for childcare for two children is more than their rent. It's more, that's how costly it is. What are you going to do to make childcare more affordable? That's a hot button issue. That problem needs to be solved. The last one here, it says, will you pledge tonight that once all legal challenges have been exhausted, that you will accept the results of this election regardless of who wins? And you will say right now that political violence in any form is unacceptable? So then you get into the great sin, as far as the radical left is concerned, is to dare question the results of the 2020 election. So they're wanting to get this out of the way ahead of time. What about 2024? Will you accept it? And then the other side, if it's fair, And the other side, well, you're not making your pledge. All through, I think there's 21 questions, if our math is right. Nothing about root causes, no mention of God, nothing really that gets to the core of any of these issues. It's just dealing with effects and not the causes. And there was nothing in that 90 minutes of debating about upholding the traditional family. There was nothing about family. The only thing about family in that debate was, like, if you run a word search, in fact, we did. Family was mentioned 3 times, and they all had to do with tax credits for whatever it was, childcare, single moms getting back to work. Parents were mentioned 1 time, and that was in the context of getting back to work and getting a tax credit and so on. A child, that was mentioned 22 times, and that all of those had to do with childcare costs, abortion, tax credits, and then there was a couple of references to children at the end when they got into the little argument about golf, where President Trump said, let's not be children. And then Joe Biden said, you are a child. So there you go. Mothers were mentioned 5 times and all in the context of abortion. And then fathers. How many times do you suppose fathers were mentioned in the 90-minute debate on Thursday night? You know, zero. Zero. Disobedient to parents. Paul said that in the last days, this is going to be a sign that society's unraveling, that society is disintegrating, where the family's upside down, or like Isaiah 3 says, the children rule, and then the fathers aren't mentioned, just like they weren't mentioned at the debate.